Well, it took a little while, but I'm very elated, very happy, and but I'm still on this side of the grass, enjoy it. Monday call this morning, and I wasn't allowed to make any calls till 9 o'clock, so it was announced. My phone started ringing off the hook, and by the time I was able to answer the phones and start taking some calls, with three phones in my house, on one phone I had 35 missed calls, another one I had 17, and I had voice messages. And I said, Mary Lou, am I glad we're going to Indianapolis this afternoon so we don't have to answer these damn phones. But, you know, I wanted to have this press conference for you guys because I know how good all of you have been to me. The 10 years that I managed the Cardinals, 19 years since I haven't managed the Cardinals, and how good you all been and how much the fans appreciate me. And I thought, wait a minute, I got a national press conference tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and I said, maybe before we leave, I ought to head do something down this ballpark. So Kathy made contact with Dan, and then Ryan, of course, was happy, and this is why I wanted to do it. And I'm on a tight schedule. I got to be in Indianapolis about 5:30 this evening, so I'm going to leave directly from here, Mary Lou and I. And I'll try to do as much as I can for you, give you what you need, but I would like to be out of here by 12 o'clock or 11:30 if need be, because I do have an hour lost in time. So when if I leave here, 12 would be 1, and I told him I'd be there by 5:30. I just want you to understand that. If I don't take care of you today, a lot of you know Kathy, my executive director of my foundation, is there something you need after we get back home Wednesday, you call her, and we'll try to set it up and accommodate you. All right, is there any questions or anything? It's just like, how does it feel to get in the Hall of Fame? Well, I've been on that nomination thing so dang long. When the Como called me, I said, Rick, I'm really not that excited about it. I said, you know, I missed by 2 votes. I missed by 1 vote. 6 years, nobody could get in with the way the voting was. And I know that Bob Braga told me that I was due to go in 97 and had some unfortunate things happen. And when that new voting came in and you had to get 61 of the living Hall of Famers, which was 82, that was not possible. You had 11 of them didn't vote. 23 of them were senile, didn't know who the hell they were voting for. I mean, that was never going to happen. So Dick Williams and I, we were splitting the vote quite a bit. We were talking about this all the time. We'll never get in unless they change the rules. And finally, I went to Ozzie's, Bruce Sutter's induction, and got to know the Hall of Fame people, and Jeff Adelson said to me, we're going to get you in. We're going to get a couple of you guys, and we got to change it. It'll never happen. Sure enough, they changed it, and I missed by 1 vote 2 years ago, and Dick got in. And this year, I was able to get in, Doug Harvey and I, my good friend. And that's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, you know, Doug kicked me out of more games than any other umpire. And him and I are the only two guys going in on our committee. I don't know how he should have got all the votes because there was only two umpires. I got 14 votes, so I'm happy about that out of 16. But the thing about it is, I just hope when we go to Hall of Fame that he don't put the tarp on the field, because most of our damn arguments were Mike Bertini would tell me, we just got a call from the airport and we're going to have severe thunder showers and lightning in 15 minutes at the ballpark. And Doug would never take my word for it, or Mike Bertani's. He'd look in the sky, and about 15 minutes later, lightning, he'd get off the field running, the lightning was after him. And by the time he got the tarp on, the field was unplayable. And I used to get into it. I'd say, don't start the game till the field's okay. I said, you put the damn tarp on when you should. These were most of our problems. So it wasn't balls and strikes. It wasn't safe or out. It wasn't fair or foul. But Doug Harvey, it was a situation, he just wouldn't listen and put that tarp on. And we had a game in New York, and we should never start the game. A downpour, we get to the fifth inning. It's 1-1, Joe McGrain's pitching. It's the last of the fourth, and he slips and throws the ball on the screen with a man on third, and we're down 2-1. And I go out there, and I said to Doug, I said, look, I said, just stop the game so we can play. It's unplayable, man. You're only out here because you're behind, he tells me. I said, well, why am I behind? My damn pitcher just slipped to the mound through a well pitch. So anyway, I got kicked out. But anyway, it's fine. I'm happy for him. He was a very good umpire. It was just he was the worst damn weatherman I ever had. Okay, now, is there any questions? Anybody want to ask me something? with everybody that's calling me, I've had a number of calls. I talked to Ozzy this morning, who was on a committee. I knew he'd get me through. He was a good little spokesman for me, and he said, "Why do you have enough votes before I got here?" But when Ozzy got on and Dick Williams had called me, and I looked at the list, last week when they sent me this stuff, I knew I had 11 short votes. I figured I had 11, and I had five guys that I didn't know. The last time I knew I had 10, and I got 11. So it worked out all right, and I'm happy. And I think Mary Lou was more emotional about it when I got the call. She started crying, and then we told Kathy last night at dinner that we'd call her, and I think she was kind of crying. I said, "You girls are going to make me cry. You know, I don't get too upset or too excited about anything. I try to take things in stride, and I don't think that I had my heart broken again if I missed by another vote or two, but I'm damn happy it's over, and happy to talk to you guys. Happy for the fans of St. Louis, because when I look at the 40-some years I spent in baseball, and a mediocre player, 5 years in the minors, 5 years manager Kansas City, getting fired in Washington, I mean in Texas my first year, but the 10 years of St. Louis were the happiest years of my life and my baseball career. And, you know, here I am now. I haven't lost a game for 19 years, and I haven't won one either. That's a problem. But the thing is, when I go to a filling station, and I go to a bank, and I go to a grocery store, and the people recognize me. They always come up every single day. It might be tomorrow. And not because I'm in the Hall of Fame, because this is now for the last, since I haven't lost a game since 1990. And thank me for 10 years of exciting baseball. And, you know, I get a kick out of the one thing that bothers me about my years with the Cardinals is that we set 7 attendance records in a row. Every year for 7 years, we broke our own attendance record. And it's not like it is now. Baseball is lying. The commissioner's office is lying when they say the Cardinals' attendance is 3 million. It's ticket sales. When we had 3 million, it was turnstile count. And I'm proud of that, but I don't understand how baseball can call ticket sales attendance, because there's a hell of a lot of no-shows in every ballpark, and I don't think it's right to deceive the public like that. I really feel that way. But I'm most happy that we were the first Midwestern team. It wasn't an East Coast or West Coast team that drew 3 million people through the turnstile. That's the thing I'm most happy about, and of course, how great the Cardinal fans are to me and Mary Lou and my family. Thank you very much.
Aside from the attendance and setting all those records, what are you most proud of from your managerial career?
Well, I'll tell you something I'm really proud of about it. In the 18-plus years I managed, parts of some, fill-in some, and so forth, I never locked my clubhouse door to the press. And I always felt that my players shouldn't hide in the training room. So I would teach my players, if you have a bad game or a good game, I want you to talk to the press. I don't want you hiding in the trainer's room. I didn't think my players needed a cooling off period. Like some managers give 15 minutes, you got to cool off. I don't think that's true. But I didn't want them hiding. Face the music, you know. Like the night that Willie McGee struck out 4 times and had 2 errors and threw his glove in the stands, I said, "Well, you talk to the press." You know what he said to him? He said, "I hope I can do better than that." I said, "I hope so too, Willie, for crying out loud." But anyway, I think that's true. And then Hummel said to me a couple of weeks ago, he said, "You know, you're the only person that I've ever covered, and I covered you for 10 years, that when you lost, you were easier to interview." And I said, "Well, the game's over. I'm not going to get it back. It's in the loss column. You guys got a tougher job when I lose than when I win, so I try to help you out a little bit and joke around. Rob covered me a lot, and Randy, I got a golf tournament in my trunk of my car for you, but it's not the one I'm driving. I'll get it over to you." But anyway, I always felt that was important to do that, and I feel good that I was always able to keep my clubhouse open and my players were men enough not to hide. I thought that was very important.
Randy, what were the last 24 hours like for you? Kind of let up having dinner last night.
I went out to the Southwestern Hearing Aid dinner. I'm not trying to bring up the hearing aids who I represent, but they are pretty good. Okay. But anyway, I want to say we had dinner. We got home at 8:30, 9 o'clock. I was watching a football game. I fell asleep, woke up at 1:15. I don't know who the hell won. I really don't.
Arizona.
Huh? Arizona. Oh, yeah, that's right. I read that this morning. But anyway, I slept till 1:15. I went to bed. And the alarm, Mary Lou had the alarm set for 5, and I woke up. And I said to Mary Lou, how come we're getting up at 5? Oh, she said, I'm busy. We got to pack. And I said, well, what if the phone don't ring? I ain't doing nothing until the damn phone rings. If I don't hear from him by 8:15, I'm not going to be doing anything. I'll have time to get down to ballpark. So what was it like? I'll tell you one thing. I was very relaxed, slept like a, I mean, good. I mean, Mary Lou said she didn't sleep. How'd you sleep, Kat?
I didn't sleep.
Okay.
I had one eye open.
Yeah. I think I could sleep on a rock, though.
Whitey, how does this compare to some of the other honors and awards, like a World Series title? How does this sort of honor compare?
Well, you know, I always felt that when you win your last game of the season and you win a World Series, you know, that's it. And that's the way I felt when we won in 82. Unfortunately, in 85, it didn't go that well. We got beat. We thought we had one, and then in 87... You know, we could have played till Easter Sunday in the Metrodome and never won a game there. You know, that was tough. But the thing is, I think when you sign a baseball contract, I signed at 17 years old to be a professional ball player in the Yankee organization. They told me DiMaggio was getting old and that I was going to take his place, and I was 5'9", 150 pounds, 17 years old. And, you know, the Yankees had 23 farm clubs, and Cardinals had 25, and the Dodgers had 26 at the time, and it was tough. There was only 8 big league teams in each league, and everybody had that many farm clubs, and it was a process of elimination. You know, I mean, it was tough. You went up one step at a time. And I think once you sign a professional baseball contract, then your goal is you want to be a big leaguer. And I had a lot of people help me. And when you get in the Hall of Fame, you better remember how you got there, and how many good people you worked for, how many good owners. How can anybody be better than me than Gussie Bushman? But once you get to be a minor league player, then you want to become a big leaguer. And then when you got to be a big leaguer in those days, you want to get 5 years in the big leagues to get on the pension plan. And then all of a sudden, we didn't make a lot of money. Hell, there wasn't much money. Even the 3 highest paid players were Musial, DiMaggio, and Williams at $125,000. Guys like Hank Barr, who were great players, made $40,000. The minimum was $6,000, and I got $6,000 my rookie year, $8,000 my second year, and I got a contract for $7,500 my third year. And he said, if you don't want it, stay home. What the hell is it going to do? So anyway, I was fortunate enough to get the 9 years. I quit when I was pretty young, 32, and I had my 5 years. I got hurt 59 pretty bad, crashed into a wall in New York, and was in the hospital in 20-some days. But once I got done playing, my goal was not so much that I wanted to be a big league manager, but my goal was really that I wanted to manage in the minor leagues and help young players. And Lee McPhail was a general manager at that time of the Baltimore Orioles. And I called him because he was the farm director in the Yankees, and we always had a good relationship. And he wanted me to manage Elmira, Double A. And I was only 32, and that's really what I wanted to do. And then finally one day, I was working for a commercial construction company, and we're pouring concrete out on 50 Highway. And those days, we didn't have cell phones, so I was a concrete foreman, and I'd gone to engineering school, 3 winters, and the phone rang, and it was Bing Devine. And he had just moved from the Cardinals to the Mets, and he asked me if I would coach third base in New York for him. And all of a sudden, I became third base for the Mets, and Yogi was the first base coach. I had more fun than I ever had. But the big thing was, I think the fact that Big Devine saw something in me that no one else, including my teachers in school or nothing, saw. First of all, I wasn't making enough money. I couldn't live in New York and send my 3 kids to college and so forth. Mary Lou was home. 2 of them were in college, 1 in high school. So I had to go back, and Finley tried to hire me back to Kansas City, and he only tried to hire me back because he wanted to fire me, because I was the first guy to ever leave him. So anyway, Bing heard about it, and he called me real late one night and asked me if I would be his special assistant. And he named me special assistant to the GM, and I got into high-level scouting and double-checking and all this stuff. And that really kind of got me started in the other end of baseball. And then at the end of that year, 67, Bing said, you know, I know you really like to be in uniform. And Bob Sheffing, who was my manager at Detroit the last year I played, he was director of player development. He said, would you like to trade jobs with Bob Sheffing? Well, I'd be in charge of the minor leagues. And, oh, man, I was elated. And I did that for 6 years. I got a lot of credit for the 69 Mets World Champions for expansion team. Maybe more than I deserve, but, you know, we worked hard and we taught well and wasn't enough hours in a day. And we only had five managers, one roving pitching coach, five trainers, and me. Seven people running the minor league. There was no coaches here, coaches there, and all kinds. I walk in the minor league camp now, they got 300 guys in the goddamn room, for not 300, about 30, 40 guys in the room and a lot of people. We did it with seven people. And five managers, five trainers, a minor league pitching coach, and myself. And then for 7 years we did that. And then we finally got a little bit better. They start letting us have pitching coach for each team and so forth. But that was a job I really loved, to help those kids and see them. We won a world championship. The free agent draft started in 1965, and we won a world championship in 69 with the Miracle Mets, and it wasn't a miracle team. We had some pitches, and we didn't have a number one, two, or three draft pick to make that team, and we won that world championship. And people say the Miracle Mets, and next year we were 10 games, we were with 8 games to go, we were 6 games up, and Pittsburgh beat us 7 out of 8, and we lost, but it was a very, very good team. Well, once I got, I guess, my job, and I turned down a lot of managing jobs. St. Peter's offered me a job in Cincinnati and Cleveland. Finley offered me a job. Bob Kennedy offered me the Cubs job. And I turned down a lot of offers to manage. I just didn't think a lot of times it was the right fit. And Ted Williams, who I played against 6 years, was managing the Texas Rangers, and he came down to the Instruction League and came. He said how good they were going to be and so forth. And I probably made the worst decision of my life. I went to Texas. I want to tell you something. I called them the Texas Strangers after I was there for about 2 months. I mean, this is the damnedest club I ever seen. I got fired on September 8th, 1973, on my son's 16th birthday. My record was 47-91. No worse than Ted's was for 6 years. But we had pantyhose night every night because Bob Short was a big entrepreneur, and he always was promoting. He didn't think about winning. And they had pantyhose every night at Arlington Stadium. And the pantyhose, which he got off a train track wreck, he bought them for about $1.50, and they were worth about $3.75. And our team that I managed was so bad that the women would buy a general admission ticket for $2.50, walk through the turnstiles, pick up their pantyhose, and leave while they're playing the national anthem. Nobody wants to play. Now, that's when you're managing a hell of baseball. But anyway, I never really dawned on me that I was going to be a big league manager, and I think being in the New York press had a lot to do with that. And then I think once you become a big league manager and you're lucky, I stepped in a bad situation, and when Joe Burke moved from Texas to Kansas City, he hired me over there and gave me a second chance, which I thought I'd never have. So I owe a lot to Joe Burke. And I stepped into a wonderful situation. George Brett was a rookie. I had Mayberry, and I had a good team, and I had Al Collins and Frank White on the bench because they were playing Cookie Rojas and Beta Pinson, and I benched those two veterans, and I put those two kids in there. It was almost like making a major trade. We were able to win 3 times, lost 2 playoffs, 5-game playoffs after you played 152 to the Yankees in the 9th inning. In the 76 and 9 and 77. And I'm so glad to see that baseball is considering now a 7-game series for the first tier of the playoffs. Forget the off days. We play all day, all season without off days. But a 5-game playoff for working your tail off for 162 games is not good. You got a much better chance, and I think you don't need off days. If you want to give television more games, play the 7, play them 6 out of 7, or set, you know, do it like that. Don't have off days in the playoff. And for crying out loud, don't play games in Colorado and Minnesota at night. Not after 3 o'clock in the morning. Don't let TV dictate everything to you. Use a little common sense for the fan. But I think that when I first thought about the Hall of Fame was when I had quit managing, and I kind of thought maybe I dug my own bed. Maybe Don Dinkinger helped a little bit. But I thought maybe I quit too soon. And I was offered quite a few jobs after I left the Cardinals. But I want to tell you something. I had a relationship with Gussie Bush. And when I wore both hats and I could make decisions, if Gussie was about 87, I'd say, Gussie, I just traded so-and-so for so-and-so. He'd say, wonderful, God dang. He said, that's wonderful. Hell, he didn't know what I was doing. And it was, no, but I mean, Gussie was so good to me. And he told me when I took this general manager's job and that manager's job in 1980 for the 81 season, the Cardinals had never drawn 2 million people since 1968. And I know their attendance was down to 1.4 million when I come here. And when I heard that they had fired Claiborne, I, in the mansion house, sit with Marilyn, and I said, you know, I want to go out and talk to Gussie and Margaret. And I went out there and I told her what I want to do. I said, you know, I want to be my own general manager and manager, try to get this thing put together. And I told Gussie what I wanted to do, because I didn't like some of the names that I was hearing about that I knew I was going to get fired if they come in here. And I told him I would take both jobs for the price of one. I was making $100,000 as a manager. And I told Gussie I'd do both jobs for $100,000. When we turn it around, we get going, take care of me. That's all I ever told him. And he kept his word. And he said, I'd never be in the last year of my contract. And he said, you're going to be the highest paid manager. When I won in 82, and he said, you're going to be the best. You're going to be the highest paid. And then he started once and did a job that nobody ever did. When they took the thing away from us in 61, 81. Lasorda finished 6 games out of first place in his division with no wild card and won a world championship. Think about that one. That'll never be done. That record will never be broken. Because when they split the season, we finished a half game out both sides, but won by 3.5. So we won our division. Cincinnati Red Ones there, neither one of us got in the playoffs. Now that's really something when you look back at the history of baseball. But that's when I start thinking about it a little bit, when I seen the Old Timers Committee, how they voted each year, and who was on it, and then Bob Braig, the 1-2-3 club, which he was. Bob Braig probably loved baseball better than any man I ever known. Maybe him and Hawtrey were the two people I knew in my lifetime that were the two people that really, really loved the game. I mean, you couldn't find two people loved the game more than those two guys. And up till the day he died, even when he'd come to the 1-2-3 club and couldn't hardly speak, he still was very interested in baseball. What a wonderful man, what a wonderful guy baseball had right in front of him, because that's the way he was. And he told me, he said, you know, Sparky goes in 95, Dick in 96, you're 97. Didn't think much of it. And that's when I first, because in 97 I missed by 2 votes, and then after that, the new voting come in, and the last time I missed by 1. So I really never, ever, as a player, as a manager, or an executive even, I never did give any thought to the Hall of Fame.